Hello, and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host Adam Richmond, and my cohort in remembrance of all things cinematic, Joseph Devine.
Guten Tag!
On today's episode, we are... See, we'll just slot... That one just cut right out.
You know? Yeah, that'll cut right out, yeah.
On today's episode, we're going to talk about the 2005 film Kingdom of Heaven, directed by Ridley Scott... he of Blade Runner.
Gladiator
fame. Here's the letterboxed summary of the story. Be without fear in the face of your enemies. Safeguard the helpless and do no wrong. After his wife dies, a blacksmith named Balian is thrust into royalty, political intrigue, and bloody holy wars during the Crusades. Those bloody holy wars, I tell you, mate. Oof, yeah. What a bloody nightmare.
Seriously.
Balian is played by Orlando Bloom, looking very bouffon. Eva Green pops up, Liam Neeson. I mean, we will get into the cast.
Oh, we will.
We will get into the cast. It's a sword and arrow film.
Can I do a better summary?
Okay.
I think what you just said at the end, sword and arrow film in the desert, is a better summary than the letterboxed one. I think it is a Crusades film where a man, you know, goes from being a blacksmith to virtually a king of Jerusalem. That's kind of it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pauper to prince type story.
Maybe
he's plucked from the soot of blacksmithery.
He's plucked from the belly of a mistress. He's a bastard, let's not forget.
He is a bastard. Liam Neeson is the father who returns, and he's the agent of story change. I'm here to show the life that you could lead. You could be a knight. There's this place called the Kingdom of Heaven, aka Jerusalem. And you should go there and hang out. It's a real laugh.
It's a laugh a minute. Do you think people have watched the film? I was thinking about this. I think I've said this before, but I keep thinking when we do these, it's better if they have seen the film, isn't it? Does it matter?
I don't think so, because I don't want to talk about the film. I never want to talk about the film. I really didn't want to watch the film. I saw it at the cinema in 2005 when it came out. I had no interest in ever watching it again.
Right.
I just thought, it's more of the same. It's more of the same gladiator nonsense, which I think is also I guess I couldn't forget about that. I think it's a very forgettable film.
Gladiator?
Yeah.
What?
I mean, let's not just go into, yes, I like this and you like that. And,
okay.
You know, we're better than that. I'm just telling you my feelings. What is the point of this kind of film in terms of, what is it supposed to, why do people watch films like this? Is it to learn something about history?
No. I ask myself this question regularly because I have seen, as I alluded to earlier on in the show, I really like the film Gladiator, okay? And I agree with you, we shouldn't get into a back and forth about the pros and cons of Crow et al. In Gladiator. But I really like the film Gladiator. I don't really like the film Troy, but I've seen it maybe 8 times, yeah? Kingdom of Heaven, I'd forgotten almost everything about this film, but I had it on DVD when I was a teenager, and when I didn't have a lot of DVDs, I watched this film several times. It's better than I remember it being. I knew it wasn't good then when I was watching it, or at least I didn't enjoy it when I was watching it as a teenager. But there's something about these historical epics that feel like that feel large in scale, you know, and in this sense, I don't think the film does a terrific job of it, but Orlando Bloom, the blacksmith, is found in France and makes his way all the way to Jerusalem. You sort of, the film has a feeling of scale to it. You know, the desire for epic goes back all the way to Homer, doth it not, Adam Richmond?
I don't know. Have you read Homer? Or are you just saying that? I think.
Well, the Iliad. You know, I'm saying like that. You know, humans have always had a desire for these grand, sweeping stories, and I think in a world in which many of them are being told, and obviously off the back of the success of films like Gladiator, it seemed that this sort of film might you know, fit the bill. I haven't seen too many films about the Crusades.
So you've not answered my question. You've just said, you've answered my
why
question.
Why do people watch them?
Yeah, you've just gone, people watch them. And I said, and I've said, why though? I'm asking
No, but
why.
Wait a sec.
Come on, we can't speak over each other.
You interrupted me to tell me I was wrong.
Mr. Mike Technique. I'm asking you why they are in, why are they in the canon?
I'm sorry that my answer wasn't concise enough.
It wasn't. You just said, your answer was because
I was coming to the why.
No, you weren't.
I was.
Okay, well, I don't want to know about the Iliad, mate. I want you to tell me why people like these stories. That was the question.
Because they want to feel as though they can be bigger, a bigger part of the world than they feel they are themselves. And in this case, you already described this film as a pauper to a priest, excuse me, a pauper to a prince. And that's a very common journey that occurs through lots of fantasy fiction, through lots of historical fiction. People want to feel as though they can make a difference in the world. And that's why, you know, the through line of the Lord of the Rings film, for example, like one of the sort of most oft quoted moments in those films is when Gandalf tells Frodo that it's not about I can't remember what he says. Anyway, the point is, it doesn't matter how small you are, you can make a huge big difference, right? People feel as though they cannot have an impact on the world around them. You know, they feel disembodied from the political culture, from communities. Communities don't really exist in cities anymore, and they feel as though they're individuals, ghosts wandering through empty desert plains without the ability to have any kind of material impact on the world around them. And that people want to follow the story of someone who did.
Okay. Yeah, maybe there's something in that.
You know, the through line of Troy in Brad Pitt's character playing Achilles in the film Troy, that is it literally in the text in that film. Like, he wants to be remembered after he dies. The irony being that there is a film being made about this historical character, you know, some 4,000 years later. It's literally there in the text.
Yeah, I mean, but
I got you.
Well, it's not a winning game. I don't think you've hit the nail on the head. You've struck the hammer. I maybe hear the sound of metal, but that could be the hammer on something else rather than the hammer on the nail.
Could be a hammer on a hip replacement.
It sounds like you've said something smart. I don't know whether you have.
That's good though. I quite like it when someone says something that sounds really smart and then you're left uncertain as to whether it really was or not, but you actually don't know.
And I'm man enough to acknowledge that.
Yeah, thank you.
Someone else listening might nod along and think, yeah, he knows what he's talking about. And equally, someone else could be nodding along sideways, shaking their head, thinking, this is utter horse wallop.
Do you know the best thing about it as well? I don't know either. But it sounds good, doesn't it?
I think because you keep throwing in other things like, oh, people really like it. It exists. You keep sort of saying because it exists in fantasy.
Yeah. Therefore I am.
Right, yeah, you're using, you're begging the question when you talk like that. You're not answering it. But you've kind of got close. I think the insignificance part of it is interesting. Moving on.
Okay, yeah. Do you not have an answer yourself? I'm curious to hear what you think.
I think I specifically see this as in the cinematic tradition of the spectacle, the epic spectacle, you know, that goes back to Ben-Hur. And, I mean, even beyond that, like in the 20s, they had one. I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah.
And then you've got your Ben-Hurs, and then you've got your Spartacuses, and your
Lawrence of Arabia.
I mean, that's separate because that's not that's an epic film, but it's not like this. That's a proper film.
Sure.
It's epic in length, but it's not Zulu.
Yeah.
Your Zulus. It's got a very basic story structure that people can latch onto, and then
the Patriot.
I mean, you know, Braveheart.
Yeah.
And then you've got some big battles. People like battles and action.
Yes,
and there's a bit of saucy love. The men who are in these films, the heroes are very honourable and they have a code. Their code is tested, but they will not be bowed. So they're deeply moral. They're always quite deeply moral films. And that just sort of tunes into a certain, I don't think it's reflective of the times. It's just a certain, it's this kind of diktat of how people are supposed to feel. It's telling you like moral codes are good. And it's just, yeah, it's always that kind of thing. So that's how I'd respond.
I'd love to talk more about that.
Okay, tell me.
Well, I watched an excellent YouTube video about this film afterwards, a little video essay.
Cheating.
That is cheating, isn't it?
It's cheating.
On my TV right now.
No, but like, you're getting your ideas from... I don't like the idea that you're all getting ideas from... I just want your take on something. I kind of don't want you to...
No, but I looked for this specifically so because it was something I was already thinking about.
But why can't you formulate your own thoughts?
Because I'm not smart.
Yeah, but that's what people want to hear. They want to hear you pretend like you know what you're talking about.
Here's some things that I've thought about of my own accord that I didn't get from anywhere else.
Okay.
Because I actually, do you know, when I went to university, the lecturers, they were all amazed by me. Because they said, hey, read this book and learn something. And I go, I won't do that because I formulate my own thoughts, actually. I'm someone who doesn't need external stimuli to... I didn't even learn language from humans. I just knew it when I was born, and then I formulated it for myself. And they said, wow, what do you think about the ethical absolutism in the film Kingdom of Heaven? And I said, well, I've actually formulated my own thoughts about that. And then I told them what my thoughts were, and they said they were amazing.
Tell me about ethical absolutism in the film Kingdom of Heaven.
The bit about this film, or the thing that I thought this film was about, at least, is, you know, there's a moment, and you probably know the special film technical term for this moment. That would be interesting for me to learn from you. But there's a moment, you know, two-thirds of the way through the film, where the King of Jerusalem summons Orlando Bloom, who is now a kind of a relatively well-respected knight and has done a great job redeveloping his father's castle in the desert, and is, you know, is on the side of good. That's been established in the film. The king summons him and says, hey, Bloom, how would you feel if I made you king of the armies of Jerusalem, yeah? If I got you to marry my sexy sister, Eva Green, Sibylla, and in order to get her current husband, Guy, out of the way, who's the bad guy, very bad, he's the antagonist in the film, Adam, we would kill Guy and his followers, thereby solving the problem the film has created and will need a solution. And you already like Eva Green and have already had sex with her. So what if you were to do this little bit of evil, as it's described by Eva Green later in the film, in order to do a great deal of good? And Bloom's decision, of course, is to say, no, that's too easy and the film would be boring if it ended in that way. Therefore, I am an ethical absolutist. I will stick to the code, the aforementioned code you've described there. When you gave the letterboxed synopsis of the film at the beginning of this podcast, Adam, the first two lines of it came from the script of the film. This is the code that Orlando Bloom's father, a knight, says aloud when he knights Bloom. He says, you know, you will do no wrong. You will always speak the truth, even if it leads to your death. You know, these sorts of, effectively, a fair amount of contradictions within the code there. But Orlando Bloom's character, therefore, makes the ethically absolute decision in this case. And that's what the film is about. Of course, that decision leads to thousands of deaths. And the film kind of buys Bloom out of it in the end and gives him a good, sort of a good outcome, or tries to paint the outcome as a good outcome for him, thereby suggesting that the moral decision that he took, that he knew internally that he didn't need anybody else to tell him was the right thing to do, was the right thing to do. Whereas I watch that film and think, hey man, here was a perfect political solution to prevent a war and the deaths of many thousands of people, and you didn't take it because of some abstract notion of sense of right and wrong. That was the most interesting thing about it for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's total nonsense. And it also, you say that's what the film is about. The film is about that. It just when it decides to be at that point in the film. It's not about that at all.
myself up as a fucking asshole.
I got so bored by just the battles. For all its failings, Braveheart, which came out in, I don't know, what was it, 1995?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm going to guess that.
1995, yeah.
Mel Gibson redefined the cinematic landscape for those battles.
Yes.
It was, no one had ever done it like that.
Paint yourself blue and stick your tongue out. That's where Avatar came from.
No, I'm talking about the way, the visceral brutality, the kind of camera in amongst it. It kind of also almost predates Saving Private Ryan. I think Spielberg kind of nicked it a bit. Anyway, I digress. I think everything after Braveheart, any scene like that with swords, they were all just harking back and doing versions of that. And it's all just, they just don't feel as good, or they just feel derivative or boring.
Yes.
Up to and excluding the Battle of the Bastards episodes of Game of Thrones.
I was thinking
which
of that.
For me is the full stop of the sentence that was started by Braveheart.
Yes, it's absolutely tremendous.
The exclamation point of, okay. So
it's the interrobang, motherfucker.
Everything in between those two things is just not, agreed. Fine, have it for a little bit, but don't hook your whole film on it. And unfortunately, a film like Kingdom of Heaven is, that's the hook. I mean, and also it's the kind of film where it's positioned, he's for so long, he's like, I'm not interested in fighting. His father has told him, he needs to protect some path or whatever, protect Jerusalem. But then as soon as it becomes like he's got to defend Jerusalem, he's none too happy. Well, no, he's all too happy to, slice down his Muslim opponents. And it's just like, I don't know, it's just so disingenuous.
It is disingenuous. And also it's stupid, Adam, because there's a few things that I think we already actually had a cheeky chat about this beforehand. But he goes from being, a blacksmith, fine, maybe he's made swords, maybe he knows how to swing a hammer, to an incredible, like one of the best swordsmen. And the film doesn't really buy this, but I allow it because the journey from France to Jerusalem would have been long. And he was with his father and his father's men. And there's one scene where they teach him how to use a sword, which incidentally is interrupted by Jamie Lannister. I very much enjoyed that. And I obviously did not know who Jamie Lannister was the last time I watched this film.
He gets one bit of advice from his father, which is hold the sword above your head like this.
And then he does it one other time in the film, and every other time it's just down by his side. I don't know if you noticed that. But, I will allow it, because even though the film doesn't really do a good job of showing the journey, it shows them once in the woods near France or in France, and then it shows them presumably at the Turkish Sea, or the Italian Sea. I'm not sure where they're crossing.
Yeah, that bit, when Liam Neeson dies, he's got a mate in Tommy from Trainspotting, and you sort of think, oh, this is going to be his cohort for the rest of the movie. And they get on a ship from France, and then for some reason the film's like, oh, it's not enough to arrive, you've got to arrive in a shipwreck. And he's been like, the film has kind of given Kevin McKidd, aka Tommy from Trainspotting, a fair amount of sort of prominence in the screen. Like he's got little wry smiles, and you think, okay, yeah, this is the character actor, he's gonna be the second in command. The ship crashes, Orlando Bloom wakes up on the beach and just wanders off by himself.
Yeah.
And then, Tommy is seen nay no more. And I found that sort of deeply dissatisfying.
It is strange.
Anyway, commence.
No, I agree. And this fits perfectly into the theme here. It doesn't buy, my complete silence as regards to the lack of actual journey displayed in the film. But because I know that's a long journey, I give them the benefit of the doubt and say, fine. He had a lot of time to learn how to be really good at a sword. So that's fine. Doesn't really earn the payoff, but I don't mind that. What I do mind, though, is how on earth did he learn to outwit an extremely experienced enemy in siege warfare? overnight. You know, he just like he becomes the defender of Jerusalem, and he seems to invent or understand how to engineer all these sort of incredibly complex and technical warfare apparatus that destroy the siege towers brought by the Muslim horde trying to get over the walls of Jerusalem. So much so to the almost to the pleasure of Salahuddin, who is the you know the kind of the leader of the Islamic army coming to take the city back. He watches on from afar and almost a little wry smile, a little nod at how smart his adversary is. This guy's a blacksmith. This guy, he might be great with a sword, fine. He's also, like, you know, insanely politically, astute, whatever. He also has an impeccable internal moral code, despite the fact that he totally has sex with Eva Green when she's already married. And he's very happy to kill many, many people, despite his moral code. He's excellent at siege warfare, and I cannot accept it. It doesn't make any sense.
Joe, you're talking about a man, yeah, who comes yeah. over, and he's the only one who knows how to dig a well.
That's
they
true.
Haven't figured out.
The Arabs hadn't figured out how to dig a well before.
Irrigation did not exist
no,
until a humble blacksmith from France came over.
Despite the fact that maths was being led by the Asian world at that time, and of course, they were far ahead of the West and other parts of the world in terms of all sorts of these evolutions and inventions. But they hadn't worked out water yet. Good for Orlando Bloom to sort that, though.
It is laughable. In Braveheart, they blag it by sort of William Wallace has... I think he's been away and, I think he's
been... He was educated by his French uncle, who took him around and introduced him to all noblemen and such.
There you go. So, you remember that. I remember there's talk of why he's so smart.
Yeah.
This film can't even be bothered to,
No. It doesn't earn any of it.
Well, I guess, it's just the age... He's the one, in the same way that Neo is. It's just like, yep. he's the hero, so he can do all these things. He's a Mary Sue... which is a reference that I've probably misused and I can't be asked to explain.
he's also the son of Liam Neeson, who is already described as the most upstanding of Western French knights in Jerusalem, despite the fact, he's built up to be this kind of, to be on this pedestal that Orlando Bloom could only hope to reach and strive for. Again, moral absolutism, ethical absolutism. He is... the pinnacle of achievement. And then Orlando Bloom shows up at his castle and he doesn't have fucking water. It's like, I don't understand how we think this makes sense. It's like, you can't say this on the one hand and then deliver something else on the other hand. And if you want us to believe that a character is growing in themselves, you have to show us that they've earned it. And they don't do that at all throughout this film. Even as far as saying Eva Green, the sexiest woman around, as soon as she sees Orlando Bloom, it's like, yeah, she wants to fuck him. And then what does she do? She comes to his house and she fucks him. He doesn't even have to try. He doesn't even do anything. He doesn't earn that. It just happens. It's just given to him, you know?
The beginning is the best bit of the film, really, because it also... Orlando Bloom's wife has... The wife's killed herself because the baby died. And then Michael Sheen, after Orlando Bloom has done the refusal of the call, which is the first thing that the hero does in any story, Liam Neeson said, come with me to Jerusalem. Orlando Bloom said, no. F you. You've always got to do the refusal of the call.
Yes.
And then Michael Sheen pops up and for no reason just sort of says, oh, I chopped your wife's head off. She was a suicide. What's she going to do in hell without her head? And Bloom, he's been hammering this sword. He really hammers away. And he takes the blazing hot sword and he stabs it right through Sheen, who bursts into flame. And I thought, oh, hello, this film's quite... mad and fun and stupid.
Yeah.
And then it's all downhill from there because it's not mad or fun or... I mean, it's stupid, but not in the way I wanted.
Can I say, I also really like the end of the film. Because, of course, at the end of the film, the tales of Balian's heroism have made it back to England. And, of course, the English want to go on another crusade. They want to get Jerusalem back. It's the Holy Land, after all, Adam. You can't just leave the Holy Land with the Muslims. That would be heresy. So they're on the way back there. But they decide to drop by this little French, rainy French village and say, we're here looking for Balian, the hero of Jerusalem. But of course, you've watched
they
a film.
The thing is, they do actually say it like that.
They do say it like that, yeah. I'm on the road to Balian. Can you point me in the direction of the hero? The point is, if you imagine you've been watching this film for almost, 2.5 hours at this point, everyone that shows up is a name. The cast is absolutely extraordinary in this film in terms of the number of recognisable faces. And also, maybe not so much recognisable at the time, but interesting that how many of them have gone on to things. We mentioned that Jamie Lannister appears a very small bit part. He's there for a mere sort of 90 seconds on screen and is killed. There is another actor from Game of Thrones that appears at the very end of the film. The man I just did an impression of. Ian Glen, who's playing Richard the Lionheart, the King of England. Ian Glen, otherwise known as Australian Perv Dad from Game of Thrones. The man that's kind of hounding Daenerys every stop.
Why is he called Australian Perv Dad?
I call him Australian Perv Dad because I play a game with a friend of mine where we try to describe Game of Thrones characters, because there's too many of them to remember their names in the series, right? So you come up with two or three words that describe who they are, and if the other person knows who that is immediately, then that's the name that sticks. And with him, it was Australian Perv Dad. Anyway, we'll play the game another time. But it's Ian Glen, of course, Ian Glen of Game of Thrones fame, who's playing Richard the Lionheart. He shows up. This film's cast is quite extraordinary, right? Even the smallest roles have actors in that I have 100% seen, all the way back to Spider from Coronation Street or EastEnders. I can't remember which one, or maybe even Emmerdale. I don't know, from one of the soaps there. But this film for me, Adam, was like, because I haven't seen it since maybe 2006 or something, I've never experienced to a greater extent watching a film again some, 15 years later, having seen so many films in the time between and learned the names of actors and seen them in repeat roles and gone, wow, that was that person. This was that person. This was that person. Explains all those moments when you watch other films and you think, oh, this person looks familiar for some reason. Yeah, it's because they were in fucking Kingdom of Heaven. I watched in 2006. They were all in it. Every actor I've ever seen is in Kingdom of Heaven.
Yeah, Brendan Gleeson, having great fun. He's really good in it. Jeremy Irons is a fantastic.
Yeah.
Bloody Ed Norton is acting behind an iron mask, kind of doing like a Marlon Brando thing.
Absolutely. But you've got Alexander Siddig, yeah? You've got, who else we got? We've got Jamie Lannister, Kevin McKidd. We've got David Thewlis. Is that how you say his name?
Oh,
Thewlis?
Fucking Thewlis.
Thewlis is there, all over the place. Oh. You've already said Michael Sheen killed off really early on. Martin Hannock, who's the soap guy I was talking about before. Neeson, Green, Bloom. It's crazy. It's like anyone who's ever been on a West End stage in London was allowed to be in the film. Terrific actors, all of them. Not a bad word to say about any of them as actors. Eva Green and the long stare. I wonder if you noticed this.
Every time that there was a battle sequence and Orlando Bloom was kind of in the middle of the desert talking to the Saladin, doing some kind of smart deal, it would cut back to Eva Green hundreds and hundreds of meters away, watching as if she could see what was going on and yes. hear it, yeah. smirking.
Yeah, reacting. Happened. Small emotional reactions. And also, the thing that annoyed me the most about this, Adam Rudd, was that it does it fine. It does it when they're in the city, even though she's so far away she couldn't hear or see. She watches Orlando Bloom knight every man that can fight in the city, and she smiles about it as though to affirm his choice. But then about 5 minutes later, when he is outside the city, as you referred to, speaking to the Salahadin, she does it again. I know that cut is taken from the same shot of her. It's obvious. It's obvious. They don't even try to suggest that, despite the fact that this is a different day in the film, that this was she was filmed in a different position. They just take a clip of that same shot of her from the bit that you've already remembered from before because of how stupid it is, and they do it again. So annoying.
Well, I think there's a director's cut of this, which is a good at least 20 minutes longer.
Uh-huh.
So they've had to compress, and that was probably like, you know, that's a bandage
sure.
to cover some kind of hack job.
Yeah.
I mean, Eva Green, like, you know, going back to you talking about this ethical...
ethical absolutism.
You know, Bloom has the chance to, like, save all these people dying.
Huh.
And then there's this big war that happens because Eva Green's husband starts it all, the baddie.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Then for the rest of the film, she chops all her hair off and she weeps and she blames herself. Like, she's the kind of... The film deflects who really is at blame.
Yeah.
Orlando Bloom.
It's Bloom!
And it's not, oh no, it's Eva Green, the harlot.
And then he rescues her from her grief at the end.
He says, oh, you know, just stop being a bloody queen, hoity-toity queen. And it's so... these films
I'll say
are
it,
so,
Adam, it's offensive.
It's so sexist. These films are so male. The version of this that I much preferred... I forgot. I do actually like a swords film in uh-huh. recent memory.
What sword film do you like?
It's The Last Duel.
Oh, I've not seen that.
Which, oh my God, what am I thinking of? It was directed by Ridley Scott.
Uh-oh.
From a script by Ben Affleck and Matt Damon.
Oh.
But it's told from the point of view, well, it's told from three point of views, but very much the protagonist and the film's point of view is female, and it's fantastic. It's really underrated. That has the most fantastic mano a mano sword fight at the end that I've ever seen.
Yeah,
and it works because it's mano a mano. It's right. Not two big battles.
I like mano a mano.
But yeah, I think Ridley Scott. Maybe it was worth him making Kingdom of Heaven because it's stuff. Then he learned to do it better.
Maybe, but he already did it quite well later. With Gladiator.
I don't know. Let's not argue about Gladiator. I just think it's all very wearisome and tiresome. And
I don't think we need to argue about Gladiator, provided that you accept that Gladiator is a better film than Kingdom of Heaven, and leave it at that.
Well, for the first 20 minutes, I was thinking, hang on a sec, this is better than Gladiator.
Right.
I mean, I think they're both two-star films.
That's okay. Okay, should we play the box office game?
Let's play the bloody box office game.
All right, why not? So now, as you remember, the box office game, you have to guess the budget, you have to guess the opening weekend US and Canada, and then you have to guess the gross worldwide. Now, it's Scotter, Ridders. It's Ridders. It's a huge cast.
Huge.
It's going to be an expensive film to make, Adam
Massive.
Richman. Now, it could be the most expensive film. I can't remember if we've done one more expensive than this. I don't know. You'll have to decide when you guess the estimated, brackets, estimated on IMDb budget for Kingdom of Heaven, please.
Let's say 120 mil.
130. Where do they drop that extra 10 mil, hey? Wait, you could have saved the money if you were a producer on this. Opening weekend US and Canada then, and it was released in May, the beginning of May in 2005.
I think it did well opening weekend. What did we... I know, I'm just trying to... We kind of established a benchmark of what a good US opening was.
Yeah.
I think it made 15 mil.
You think it made 15 mil?
Yeah.
It did better than that, Adam Richmond. It made 19.6 mil in its opening weekend. Very close.
I don't think, now talking about its entirety of its box office.
Gross worldwide.
I don't think it obviously did as well as Gladiator, which probably made like three times its budget. I reckon that was Gladiator was 100, and I think it made 300 million. I think this made 250.
You think it did 250?
I think so.
Okay. Well, it didn't do quite that well. It did 220. In other words, $0.22 billion. Pretty impressive still. A lot of money.
It's not... It's maybe washing its face. Maybe. And it's not a critical success.
No.
It's a movie you forgot. It really is exactly in the wheelhouse.
I mean, it's kind of the perfect one, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not the perfect one to watch because it took two hours and 20 minutes and it was... I've got better things to do, mate.
Yeah. Well,
don't ask me what, but I'm sure I do.
You said that last week as well, but you're still here.
Incredible. I don't want to sound... Maybe I sound disingenuous. Someone listening was like, they would just think, well, go on and fucking do it then, mate. Stop moaning.
I wonder after, is this episode 10? I think it is. Episode 10, I reckon you've got about a 40% hit rate of, I've got better things to do.
I think it's just like a conversational tick. It's something, again, like the way that I'd say I don't like a film,
yeah,
or I say it's shit. It doesn't mean that. You know,
no, you say it to me when we're out drinking and stuff. You know, it's just something that you say. It doesn't mean anything.
No, nothing I say means anything.
No, I think the listeners know that, so that's okay.
I mean, I am actually really enjoying being here and talking. It gives my life purpose. What else? So, what else am I going to do?
I don't know.
I've got better things to do, but at the same time, I've got this is exactly what I'd like to do. Okay, fantastic. So I think that's Kingdom of Heaven, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And now all that's left for us to do, Adam Richmond, is to pick a film for next week, and it's your turn to read the list to me.
I've said some of these before, but I'm saying them again.
Okay.
30 Days of Night.
No.
I love that film.
I haven't forgotten it.
It's a shame. I'd love to chat about that. It's a shame we're not doing a podcast about films that we really love.
What a shame.
Traffic.
I don't think I've ever seen Traffic. I've seen Human Traffic. Now I realise you have said these before because I said exactly that last time.
What, Traffic?
Yes. You've introduced that one before and I said, I don't think I've seen that film. And then I said, oh, I think I've seen Human Traffic. And then I remembered that I'd already said that.
Great. It's almost like you just did an echo within an echo there.
Yeah.
Hollow Man.
I've never seen it.
These are really good picks, but everything I say is exactly the kind of film that we should be chatting about.
Right.
Like perfectly fine, decent films.
That's the frustration of this podcast, isn't it? That's the limitation that we've placed on ourselves is mostly funny for me. Because you've seen far more films than I have, and you want to talk about these. When I write my list, I don't really want to talk about any of them.
I mean, maybe, you know, why don't you take note of the films that I say out now, because you will forget them.
That's prepping for success, isn't it? That's imagining that we are going to...
Because in a year, you will have forgotten it, and we can do it.
I've just about got time to watch the film we're doing for the podcast.
Oh, Mr. I'm so busy. Yeah. What Lies Beneath?
I've not seen it.
The Gift.
I've not seen it.
Vertical Limit.
I've not seen it.
Tigerland.
I've not seen it.
Proof of Life.
I've not seen it.
The People versus Larry Flint.
I've not seen it.
Executive Decision.
I've not seen it.
Air Force One.
I have seen it, but who could forget that film? Come on, man.
I only ever saw it the once in the cinema. Again, a really good shout, and it's a shame that you haven't forgot it.
I'll tell you what, it's a shame that ITV, a regional television broadcaster in the United Kingdom, Adam Richmond, have that shit on repeat.
I don't watch TV.
No.
The Ninth Gate.
That I could never forget that film. Oh, maybe I want to forget that one. Maybe I want to forget that. I might want to forget that one.
Bowfinger.
No. I think I want to forget that one. I think I want to forget that one.
No. You're going to have to get that on the next... I'll include it on the next list.
Okay, fine.
You didn't forget it.
I'll cut that bit, yeah. Fine.
Bowfinger.
I have... hold on. No, I haven't seen Bowfinger. I've been told to watch Bowfinger.
Don't watch Bowfinger.
Okay.
The 13th Warrior.
I've not seen it.
I mean, I think you might like that.
Yeah?
You like fantasy
stuff. You like shit films, don't you?
You like shit films, mate. The General's Daughter.
No.
Pushing Tin.
Yeah.
The Ice Storm.
No.
Conspiracy Theory.
Are these even real films?
Yes. I mean, I think it's funnier if I just list them. I could talk about them as well, but...
No.
That's
yeah, you go. No. You keep going.
Blown Away.
No.
The Specialist.
That rings a bell, but what is The Specialist? No,
you wouldn't have seen it. Sylvester Stallone. There's a saucy shower scene.
No, I haven't seen it.
Sylvia.
No.
That's a film about Sylvia Plath.
Are these from a sort of era where I wasn't alive or something?
I took them from the late 90s and the early 2000s.
Okay, early 2000s I should be getting.
Any Given Sunday.
No.
End of Days.
What's that? Is that a Tom Cruise film?
No, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No, I haven't seen it.
It's Satan. I don't want to read that one out. He Got Game?
No.
That's a Spike Lee film.
Okay.
It's all right. Very forgettable. A Perfect Murder. Again, obviously it's forgettable, sorry.
No.
A Perfect Murder.
No.
Croupier.
No.
Bulworth.
Bullwinkle. Rocky and Bullwinkle with Robert De Niro. No.
The Siege.
No, don't think so.
That's Bruce Willis. And it's like New York there's a terrorist threat and it gets locked down. So it kind of explores. You might like that.
Maybe I would.
We like shit films.
Yeah.
Dead Man's Curve.
No.
Never Let Me Go.
What, the Kazuo Ishiguro
the
film adaptation with Keira Knightley?
Yeah, sounds like you've remembered it.
I have remembered it, and I don't feel as though I would forget that, but mainly because I've read the book.
Robin Hood. The one with Russell Crowe.
Do you know what? Scott. I would never forget that film.
Because yeah, it's good, man.
I liked it, and I was really disappointed that they didn't continue with the trilogy, and I could never understand why. And also, I lent that on DVD to someone that I used to know, and they never gave it back to me. And I used to think maybe I dreamed that it existed, but it's good.
Night and Day.
I've never actually seen Night and Day.
Okay, I think this is going to be the one. Get Him to the Greek.
I haven't forgotten that film, I'm sorry. I do like that film.
Greenberg. It's got Ben Stiller in it.
I have not seen Greenberg.
The Wolfman.
The Wolf?
Benicio del Toro.
Oh no, I've not seen it.
Legion, you haven't seen that.
No. Well, you've turned the page. I heard the page turn.
Okay, listen, you wanted to forget the Ninth Gate. We're going to go back. You have forgotten the Ninth Gate.
I've been given permission to forget the Ninth Gate.
Yeah, you've gotten permission. It's a really good one to do.
It is good. There's so many themes.
I hope it's a good one.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, my sleeping children are squawking and I feel like I don't want to be a rubbish dad, so I'm going to have to end this now.
Yeah.
Lovely speaking to you and see you later.
All the best.